Well, welcome to the iPharmRx podcast, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. Today, we'll be discussing drug-resistant hypertension and the use of spironolactone to get patients to goal. Although many patients respond to the first-line recommended drug treatments for hypertension, a significant portion of patients require more than three medications. It is in these circumstances where spironolactone might be the best choice. Joining me today is Dr. Rose Pavlakos from the Ohio State University College of Pharmacy, where she practices at the Ohio State University General Internal Medicine Primary Care Clinics. Drs. Pavlakos and Deborah Barnett wrote a commentary for iPharmRx entitled Pathway 2, Does the Road Lead to Spironolactone for Drug-Resistant Hypertension? The Pathway 2 study was published in September 2015 in the journal Lancet. Rose, thank you for joining me today for the iPharmRx podcast.
Thank you for having me. I really look forward to our discussion.
So my first question, if you had to briefly summarize in four sentences or less, the study entitled Spironolactone versus Placebo, Bisoprolol, and Doxazosin to Determine the Optimal Treatment for Drug-Resistant Hypertension, Pathway 2, a Randomized Double-Blind Crossover Study, to someone who hasn't read the paper, what would you say?
You know, this study was the first to provide a head-to-head comparison of common fourth-line agents used for the treatment of resistant hypertension. And so what they did is they put together a 12-month double-blind placebo-controlled crossover trial that compared the efficacy of a beta blocker, alpha blocker, and aldosterone antagonist to one another. And their primary goal in doing this was to find an optimal treatment option for patients who were already being treated with three-drug first-line therapy, for example, an ACE inhibitor or angiotensin receptor blocker, calcium channel blocker, and a diuretic. So by utilizing home systolic blood pressure readings as their primary endpoint, what they found is that spironolactone consistently provided the greatest amount of blood pressure lowering effect compared to bisoprolol and doxazosin when added on as a fourth line agent in these patients. And so previous literature has supported the evidence of aldosterone antagonists in terms of their efficacy in treating resistant hypertension. Although this is truly our first direct comparison trial that really allows us to evaluate side by side our best treatment option for patients who are already on first-line therapies.
In critically examining the study methodology, Rose, what would you say are the major strengths, potential weaknesses, and the limitations of the Pathway 2 study?
You know, I feel overall this study was really well designed. They put together a double-blind, placebo-controlled crossover design where they randomly assigned patients to each drug sequence. They also had a decent population size with 230 of their patients completing all four treatment cycles. And I believe that the researchers did a really good job going through a process to eliminate poor adherence. They also did not include patients if they had a compelling indication for the use of alpha antagonist or a beta blocker, or any patients with a recent cardiovascular event requiring hospitalization. One of the more unique pieces to this trial is that they utilized home blood pressure readings as their primary endpoint, which could have possibly eliminated white coat hypertension. And they also did a great job in making sure that each patient had the same blood pressure monitor for consistency in blood pressure evaluation. And so then when we look at the weaknesses or potential limitations of this study, we have to evaluate their population. Unfortunately, it's difficult to generalize the results of this study considering the fact that most of their population had relatively low mean blood pressures of 148 over 86. They also only included patients with a mean EGFR of 91.1, which may not be representative of patients with resistant hypertension and declining renal function. Race was also not included in the demographics, and we know that we use specific agents, and we have preferred agents for specifically our African-American race. An overall patient population consisted of primarily healthy male patients. And so another thing that they didn't look at is they didn't eliminate patients with sleep apnea, and this was a significantly obese population that they had involved in their study. They also didn't eliminate patients with hyperaldosteronism as a secondary cause. The two primary limitations to this study, I would say, is that they weren't able to assess overall long-term safety, especially in the patients with kidney disease. Also, they didn't look at other potential adverse effects like gynecomastia, and we know that with this drug specifically, patients may not be taking this agent due to these side effects, and they were not able to evaluate that in such a short time frame. And then in terms of efficacy, they used surrogate endpoints of blood pressure, which does correlate well with morbidity and mortality, although specific outcomes data would have been preferred.
So the results of Pathway 2 certainly suggest that spironolactone should be considered as the preferred add-on agent in many, if not most, patients with drug-resistant hypertension. The findings are consistent with previous studies that have used spironolactone, but are there any surprises, findings that are particularly compelling or worrisome, or findings that merit further investigation?
Well, you know, this study did show consistent efficacy data in terms of blood pressure lowering effects of spironolactone in patients with resistant hypertension. But I would say that the primary benefit of these results and the most surprising evidence was the amount of blood pressure lowering that was seen with spironolactone when compared to these other commonly used drug classes. So my first thought after reading this was, why is this agent not used more routinely in practice? Something that I find worrisome is overall safety, and so it would be important to evaluate long-term safety of each of these agents in regards to renal function. Also, another thing, although no patients really required study withdrawal, 6 patients did develop asymptomatic elevations in serum potassium greater than 6 on spironolactone. And so knowing that there's this increased risk for hyperkalemia associated with this drug, it would be important to understand the need for careful monitoring. So what I would say would be worth investigating further, it would be important for us to identify whether or not the benefits of blood pressure control with spironolactone improve cardiovascular outcomes, including morbidity and mortality. We also still have no data to help us evaluate the best option for treatment of resistant hypertension in patients with more severe kidney disease. And it could be important and useful to compare spironolactone to other diuretics, for example, chlorthalidone, also compare it to alpha-2 antagonists, direct vasodilators, mixed alpha and beta blockers such as labetalol, or any other commonly prescribed fourth-line agents.
So for many years, the hypertension gurus have advocated using plasma renin activity to guide the management of hypertension. And indeed, in the Pathway 2 study, those patients with the lowest plasma renin activity had the largest improvement in their blood pressure when given spironolactone. Now, I want you to imagine you have a 54-year-old African-American man who's returning to clinic today for blood pressure management. He's currently taking lisinopril 40 milligrams and chlorthalidone 25 milligrams and amlodipine 10 milligrams daily. And despite triple therapy, his blood pressure reading today in clinic was 148 over 86 when it was taken by the nurse using an automated blood pressure machine. And your repeat reading using a manual mercury sphygmomanometer is 150 over 84. He has a strong family history of kidney disease and stroke, so this patient is particularly worried about his blood pressure control. What would be your approach to managing this patient? Is spironolactone the way to go? And if so, what dose would you start with? Would you order plasma renin activity? And would you explore secondary causes of hypertension, such as hyperaldosteronism at this point? And what about the role of 24-hour blood pressure monitoring and home blood pressure monitoring in a case like this?
Well, I'll start off with answering what I would do in terms of managing this patient's blood pressure. And really, the first thing that I would want to do is look back and compare these readings to previous clinic readings. I'd also like to assess patient adherence and evaluate potentially other therapy or lifestyle that may be contributing to this elevated blood pressure readings. Another thing that would be important to assess would be kidney function, and I'd like to get labs drawn looking specifically at electrolytes and potassium levels to evaluate the safety of adding on various fourth-line options. So I would say that if the patient's renal function or eGFR is greater than 45 mL per minute and their potassium is less than 4.5, adding on spironolactone 25 milligrams would be an appropriate option for this patient. I'm not sure that at this time it would be necessary to explore hyperaldosteronism, but I would definitely look into things such as sleep apnea, as this seems to be more prevalent and a bigger player in terms of response to therapy. whether or not I would order plasma renin activity, you know, African Americans in general have been found to have lower renin activity. Within the trial, they did look at renin activity and how it relates to patient response. And what they found is that all patients still did respond to therapy. So to answer your question about the role of the 24-hour blood pressure monitor and home blood pressure monitoring, I would say that both of these have been useful in ruling out white coat hypertension. The 24-hour blood pressure monitor could also assist us in identifying whether or not this is truly resistant hypertension, although there are some disadvantages to using the 24-hour blood pressure monitor in that it could be very expensive depending on insurance coverage. So if this patient was not able to afford the 24-hour blood pressure, I would definitely consider home monitoring, and either way, I would encourage the patient to check his blood pressure at home, as this would assist us with chronic evaluation of treatment response.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Pavlakos, for joining us today for the iFormerX podcast and sharing with us your thoughts regarding the Pathway 2 study and the use of spironolactone for drug-resistant hypertension. It's clear from your comments that you believe spironolactone has a significant blood pressure-lowering effect in patients with treatment-resistant hypertension, but we still have a lot to learn in terms of tolerability, safety issues, as well as long-term efficacy based on cardiovascular outcomes. Well, tell us what you think. Should spironolactone be the preferred drug when patients need more than three medications to achieve their blood pressure goal? And what about the role of beta blockers, reserpine, or even guanfacine? Post a comment. Only members of iFormRx can post comments. Sign up today. It's free. And until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, signing off.